Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Tom Magnifico, Vice President of Professional Services and Engineering at CrossCap. Tom's an experienced professional with a successful 10-year track record in the financial services, retail, and property casualty insurance industries, a leader with proven ability to develop and implement new software products, as well as sales and marketing strategies in order to acquire new customers and retain existing accounts. I think just to give everyone some context, might be good to get like a brief kind of overview of your background and kind of how you first got interested in technology and such.
Sure. So, you know, obviously, little kid, love computers, love video games, you know, love technology. I guess I grew up in the 90s, right? So, you know, playing video games, all that kind of stuff is what really got me interested in, you know, computers in general. And, you know, even in high school, you know, we had some computer science stuff. You know, again, that was probably early, late, you know, 90s, early 2000s when, you know, computer science and programming and all that stuff was, it wasn't cool back then, right? But we still had some classes in my high school and whatnot. And, you know, a whole bunch of people, a group of us, at least, you know, in my high school were very interested in computers in general. So they had opened some classes up and whatnot to even do that in high school. So, you know, when I was looking for colleges, I was really interested in computer science, programming, you know, whatnot, and had gone to a school in New Jersey called the New Jersey Institute of Technology, which is, again, it's a state school, but, you know, really big on, you know, technology, science, all the STEM stuff. And I had went for computer science, learned how to code, you know, did all that stuff. And then when I graduated, or was close to graduating, I knew I didn't want to be a programmer, right, you know, in general, because, you know, I had interned at a few places and, you know, I wasn't somebody who wanted to sit at a desk and code all day. But again, I loved, you know, working with technology and building things, right? So, you know, from a career perspective, I was like, well, you know, what can I do that, you know, involves coding and technology, but, you know, is really more business focused. So when I had, you know, started looking for internships and whatnot, I had, you know, tried to find something that, again, you know, I wasn't specifically doing some code, but I was, you know, working with computers and stuff, right? So I was QAing some software at a company called ADP for a while. And then I had moved to a company that was working in the, you know, financial services insurance space, you know, building out products and on the business side. So, you know, that's kind of how I started my career. And I just jumped from there from a product perspective and technology perspective and working with different technologies to build products for people.
What was the, like, obviously for a lot of technical people, people who are interested in technology, it's not always a natural fit to be inclined and have an interest in the business side of things. Was that just always something that you knew you kind of wanted to pursue? And was that kind of a differentiator for you compared to, you know, other friends or colleagues who were interested in the technical side of things?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. Again, I don't want to use the thing, say, I like interacting with people because, you know, today's day and age, you know, developers and whatnot, and the developers who work for me or work for our organization, again, are very, you know, social people and they like to, you know, interact and understand what they're building. But again, you know, I was more interested in, you know, the business side from the standpoint of saying, you know, well, you know, how do we productize what this code is doing? How do we, you know, build a business plan, a marketing plan around this software? Like, what is that? That really interested me. So again, you know, that side was very apparent that that's something that I wanted to do. And, you know, even from a career perspective, you know, going up and, you know, hiring developers or working with developers and whatnot, you know, it's very difficult from an organizational standpoint to find people or individuals who are you know, interested in both the business and technology side, or understand both, right? You either have a technical person or you have somebody on the business side. You know, what we find today from an organizational standpoint, and it's what I look for people, is, you know, you have to be able to go on both sides, right? You need to understand, you know, what we're trying to achieve from a business standpoint. And then, you know, on the technical side, you need to find someone who also, you know, understands how to code, right? And build the products that we're looking to do. So it's rare to find that. But again, we're finding people or individuals now today that, you know, want to do both of those. So again, that's helpful to any organization, excluding ours. You know, for again, just from a development standpoint or a coding standpoint, you know, if you're interested in, you know, not just coding and building a product, but understand how, you know, from a value perspective on the business side, you know, what the company or what our clients are looking for, you're going to do that much better from a success standpoint.
When you think about the product facing side, do you think, I mean, this is just an opinion, but for me, it would seem that there's a greater sense of accomplishment, and that might be stepping out of line in saying that, but when you can see the direct impact on business goals from your work, that must give like a sense, a slightly greater sense of accomplishment. But again, I might be wrong in saying that, but that would be my assumption.
I think so. You know, just being a VP of engineering, you know, again, my organization or title is interesting because I'm both VP of engineering and professional services. So I work with the clients and I work with engineers and technology people on our side, right? So there's a mix of that interaction. But I, you know, talking to clients, you know, building products for, you know, Fortune 500 organizations, and, you know, again, CrossCab isn't a big organization, you know, we're a startup, right? But, you know, again, you know, you having clients utilize a tool that you create, and they're multi-billion-dollar organizations, that there is a gratification there, right? And working with that. And again, what I've tried to do from an organizational standpoint, you know, at least here and again, prior places, again, you know, that's why I say you need to understand what you're building and who's using it and what that is. Because when you get that understanding, you know, again, it's gratifying to engineers, but it's also gratifying to understand that you built a product that solves problems for, you know, these huge companies or companies that are doing awesome things, right? So I would have to agree.
I think so. I think that was kind of the point as well, when, you know, development and technology all of a sudden became sexy, right? And the developers became the rock star. And it's so hilarious because the skill set's always been there. But as soon as, you know, the layman can see an actual product from their work, all of a sudden it's sexy. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? The way that people, how people depict things.
Well, yeah. Again, social, like, again, you know, when MySpace, Facebook, all those things came out, right? You know, that's when it got started to get sexy, because again, there was always people working on Windows or whatnot, right? And software, right? But that, you know, to people, it really didn't mean anything. Video games was like a niche thing where I think, you know, people or developers or engineers or people who were working on like video games and whatnot, yeah, that was the start of it, right? To be, oh, that's pretty cool, I want to do that. But again, it wasn't very popular, right? But, you know, things like Facebook or MySpace, or again, I'm showing my age a little bit with MySpace, but, you know, now Snapchat, all those things from a social media perspective, right? It's very mainstream, right? So, you know, people want to work on that. They want to be a part of that, right? Because, you know, it's not just, you know, a certain amount of people play video games. And now today it's a lot more people than it was before, but, you know, people use these things, right? And it's cool. They want to contribute to that, right? And again, you see a lot of more people going for the, you know, programming, technology degrees. And again, we still don't have enough people, right? That's the thing, you know, depending even, you know, outside of Silicon Valley and, you know, Silicon Alley, right? You know, there's big tech centers there. And then, you know, Austin and Toronto, where we have some offices, again, there's a lot of people, you know, that have those type of degrees that want to work for that. But again, there's still more, right? There's still demand for those type of people, and we need more people, you know, going out or kids going out to schools to learn these types of things.
Yeah, it's interesting that you actually say that and say degrees. I mean, a lot of developers that I know personally didn't necessarily go down the traditional route of, you know, getting a degree in technology or a degree in computer science. It seems to me that, like, that traditional path is kind of at a point of inflection where people are developing better skills from home and not going into the classroom. What have been your experiences? You know, if you've had, you know, any high, you know, recruitment cycles or anything where you've had to take these type of things into consideration?
Well, I think early on, you know, again, I think it was looked on, and again, not necessarily for me, but just places where I worked. You know, if you don't have a computer science degree or a computer engineering degree or develop anything associated with development, like, it was a negative, right, somebody coming in from a hiring perspective. But I do agree with you now, like, you know, entry points into, let's just say, front-end development, right? Traditionally, like, again, there wasn't a degree for a front-end developer, right? There was no specialty. Like, a lot of designers or people who are interested in, like, building web pages and stuff like that, you know, kind of transitioned to a front-end developer. You know, on the back end, again, traditionally a back-end developer, you know, somebody who knew Java, computer science, I mean, C++, excuse me, you know, C#, whatever all these languages were, you know, again, you saw a big, big shift in, you know, the entry point into these types of things, right? Because you're right, you know, somebody can go home, read a book about, you know, certain type of technology and learn how to code that, right? So you see it from a career path perspective where people are interested in now engineering and development and whatnot. And again, it's traditionally not somebody going to a school and learning it, right? They're either learning it by themselves or, you know, again, they've done some work on, like, SQL, right? Somebody, you know, somebody working with SQL, again, you know, that's not going to be, you're not going to be a developer if you know that, right? But it's kind of an entry point into doing different things. So even when I try to hire individuals, and again, we hire front end, back end, you know, middle layer, full stack developer, right? Resumes that we get in today, you know, again, you see a large portion are, you know, been developers forever, but they didn't start there, right? So it's very prevalent, you know, nowadays. But again, like, younger individuals who are, you know, trying to get into development, they've gone to tech school, right? So again, I think it's a generational shift where, you know, a lot of the younger kids who are interested in technology and, again, are applying for some of these positions, you know, they've gone to a certain type of technology school or done that, right? Right.
Indeed. Well, I think one of the traits as well that we have to consider in this kind of fast evolving you know, line of technology that we're involved in is the willingness to learn and that thirst to continually learn and improve and change your skill set. Well, that's something that's very hard to kind of quantify on a resume, but, you know, it's certainly massively important, especially now.
Agreed. And I think you could see that too from individuals you, like, talk to from an interview perspective or bring them in. Like, you know, we give a technology test or a programming test, depending on the job, right? And again, it's designed to be hard, right? You know, again, it's, you know, I'm not going to say we're a Google of the world giving those crazy tests, right? But again, any organization is given, you know, from a technology perspective, developers, but they're going to give you a test. And the test is meant to see how you approach problems and how you, you know, how you would approach a problem. And again, you know, something that I see or what I would ask for, you know, from an interview perspective is, you know, you might know not how to answer it, but again, if you're asking the right questions on, you know, is there something that I need to think about, or I want to try this, or I don't know how to do this now, but I would read this or go find this information somewhere, you know, that's just as important as somebody can actually, you know, solve the problem right there. Like, I'm not going to knock you from an interview perspective if you don't know how to do it. If you can try to explain where you would try to find the answer or find the information, like, that's just as important, like you say. It shows that willingness to learn.
Yeah, I agree. And that's an interest. Yeah, it's a good point. You know, and a great way to kind of identify those traits. I like it. Let's get kind of back to you a little bit. So what is it that, you know, keeps driving you forward and motivated?
Sure. I'm a builder. I like to say that I'm a builder. Right? And again, that can mean a lot of different things, whether it's building software, building an organization, right? You know, going to a startup, building like a services organization, right? Because again, you know, from a startup perspective, you know, you're so busy trying to understand or trying to solve that one problem that, you know, again, whether you're trying to monetize or whatnot or figure out what you're going to do, you know, again, a lot of times the services side or the account management side, you know, it kind of suffers, right? Because again, you've got everybody focused on solving one problem, right? You know, so there's a lot of opportunity to build different things from a professional services or an engineering perspective. So, you know, I like to come in and just build things, whether it's product, right, organizational things. You know, again, just different types of ways to solve problems. Again, it's something that excites me to come to work. you know, you kind of get lost in that though too, because when you're, you know, you're working in smaller companies, you know, there's just so many, you know, titles are very outward facing. It's another thing, right? You know, you're always touching different things. You know, I touch marketing, I touch sales, I touch engineering, I touch professional services. So, you know, working in an organization like that and being able to touch things like that and learn on the job is something that's invaluable, and that's what excites me, right? Again, you know, even bringing people on. It's like, do you want to be a cog in the machine, or you want to be the whole wheel, right? You know, that's the allure of working in startups. And again, that's what gets me up every day to come here and help organizations like this, you know, solve problems and win and do things.
I like it. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I actually started out my career in startups. Have you always been involved in startups? How did you sort of dive into your first startup?
Well, it was reversed for me. I worked with big organizations first in my career, you know, bigger organizations, very established. And, you know, again, you know, being, like you said, the willingness to learn and want to learn things, you know, that was part, like, again, I guess being a millennial or whatever you want to label me as, you know, that's part of who I am, right? So, you know, working in big organizations, obviously, you know, you get a lot of experience and understanding the way things work from a business perspective, right? But you're very siloed, right? You're probably working on one small thing. You know, again, individuals want to grow. Like, you know, I feel like there's when you work in an organization, there's many different types of individuals. There's individuals who, you know, want to come and do their job, and that's fine, right? They want to be that person, you know, who's going to sit there and know what they're going to do for the next 5, 10, 15 years. Again, perfectly acceptable. But, you know, again, somebody who wants to come in and, you know, has a lot to offer and challenge and grow, right? I think there's value in that too. And again, I don't want to be labeled as a millennial or part of that generation that feels entitled and whatnot. But again, if you're performing at a level which is, you know, very high, you know, there's got to be an opportunity for you to want to do different things. So working in a big organization, again, there's a lot of opportunity to learn on the job and do that. But, you know, again, I find startups, or how I got involved in the startup, is again, just opportunity came up. It wasn't what I was looking for, something or a startup to go to. It was more so, you know, finding the right opportunity for me to grow or offer something that I wasn't being able to do, you know, in the position I was. And I just landed in a startup, and it was culture shock for me, because again, you know, if you think big organizations move slowly, the startups move really fast, right? So, you know, again, it was something that, you know, I don't think you can I don't think you can describe it unless you do it and experience it. And again, it could be addicting, depending on, you know, again, there's a lot of success, there's a lot of failure in some startups, they move fast, right? So if you're the type of person who really wants to, you know, go to an organization that you're going to be, like I said, you're going to be a big part of that wheel and not just the cog, right? Startups for you. And again, you're going to learn on the job, and that experience is invaluable. You know, again, you're not going to get that at a big organization. And again, it's been beneficial for me. And again, I hope it continues to be in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. But I think, you know, it's an interesting one that, for me, I mean, obviously being in startups at an early stage, you know, they're so glamorized now, being involved in startups. And now there's so many people who have a desire to get involved in startups for the first time. And it's a shock, like you say, it's a massive shock for people. And it's quite funny for me, because people just don't know what's hit them when they go in, because they see the slides going through the offices and all the kind of the funky, you know, pool tables in the middle of the, you know, meeting room and stuff like that, and think that, like, that's what people do all day. It's not that. Let's just put it there. It's very, very hard work, and you have to be a certain individual to want to take on something like that and really grow it. Like you say, if you want a huge responsibility for the same or less pay, then startups are for you.
Yeah. I mean, again, everybody, you know, there's a lot of glamour in startups, right? Again, you look at the Facebooks of the world, you look at the Snapchats, like, there's glamour in that. Because, you know, again, money is a motivating factor. But again, it took them years to get there. A lot of endless nights, people working crazy hours. And again, you know, not every startup is like that. Again, you know, not every startup is going to be a Facebook or a Snapchat. But, you know, to be successful, you have to be there, right? The unicorn, right? It's that every startup's not going to be a unicorn. But again, if you go to an organization that's starting out, you build something from scratch, you get, you know, X amount of users, you're making money, you're profitable. There's just as much gratification in that than, again, if, you know, if you're that sexy thing, right? That's Facebook, Snapchat, et cetera. So, you know, again, but, you know, even to get there, to your point, you know, there, you're not, titles are very outward facing. I always like to say that, right? You know, VP, whatever, like, again, when you work at a startup, especially where we are now, it's very flat, right? You're an individual contributor and you're also a manager. And again, you know, that's what's also gratifying. It's like, you know, I don't want to sit in an office and be a manager of engineers and understand that, or, you know, service people, right? I'm an individual contributor. I'm there on the front lines working as well, right? So, you know, again, you see that every day in and day out where, you know, as a bigger organization, that's not necessarily the case, right? So it's also another value add for me as a, as an individual, to be able to work on things and contribute in that way, but also be able to, you know, oversee and manage and understand, you know, the rest of the organization as well.
So, moving topic slightly, onto people, you know, obviously we have vested interest in talking about people. It's an area that we're quite familiar with. I suppose the a great place to start would be the first time in your career where you were kind of almost hands-off tools, and then all of a sudden, here you go, you have to manage people now. Good luck. Pat on the back. How did that come about for you? And, you know, how did you take to it? You know, we all know it's a particular challenge for anyone, for technical people in particular, it can be. So I'd be curious to know kind of your experiences when with managing people, and how it's kind of, you know, progressed for you and continuously, I'm sure, surprises you.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, everybody's, well, mostly people's first experience, like, managing people is indirectly, right? You know, you might not necessarily have people reporting to you, right? But you're in charge of a project or in charge of something. I mean, I guess, you know, again, from a management perspective, I think that's where most people start, right? You're working on a team, like, you're responsible for this, right? People don't report to you per se. And then, but, you know, you're directly responsible for their success because you're, you know, giving direction. And again, I think that's how I started, you know, having people or managing people, right? It was indirectly, right? And again, you know, moving to different positions, like, then, you know, you might have direct reports, but, you know, again, you're working with people every day, right? So, you know, being involved in organizations, you know, you have people who report to you, but you work with people, right? And again, I think that's a different type of management, right? Because you have to be able to work on a team, and you also have to give direction. You know, as I've progressed through my career, you know, whether it's, you know, managing a small team or now managing a, you know, huge team of engineers and other people, you know, I think it's, you know, give people the tools they need to succeed, right? Don't be somebody who's going to micromanage somebody. But, you know, my job as a manager or somebody who's being a mentor or whatnot is to give you the tools that you need to succeed in your job. And if I don't do that, that's how I judge failure as being a manager. So from an engineering standpoint, right, it could be, well, do you have the right software you need? Do you have the right, you know, stack on your machine, right? From a professional services side, or somebody who's doing account client services, you know, do you have all the tools you need to service your clients, right? What do you think we need, right? It's our job as managers, whatnot, to give you that. And then from a mentoring side, right, you know, I look for people, like I said, who, when I hire for positions, engineering, professional service, doesn't matter. Again, it's the willingness to learn, like you said, and it's more so, you know, are you somebody who's going to be able to do 80% of the job and the last 20% learn on the job, right? Because again, if you can do 80% and you're willing to do learn the last 20%, if you know it, like, that's somebody who's going to grow in a position, right? They're going to get some experience that they didn't have before, and they're going to teach me some things too. So, you know, again, I'm not somebody who's going to sit there and just, you know, give direction all day. Like, I want to empower you to have the tools that you need to succeed. And you're going to go do that job, and you're going to tell me, you know, the things that, you know, that necessarily that we need to do as an organization to make you succeed. And you're going to find out very quickly if, you know, the person that you've hired for that position is going to be able to do that, right? There's a lot of soft skills that, you know, not necessarily like soft skills that wouldn't show up on a resume or will show up on a resume that I would look for more so than, oh, well, this guy has done Java development for the last 10 years. He's going to be successful, right? Or, you know, this person's managed, you know, huge accounts and generated this much revenue increases for the last 3 or 4 years. Again, yeah, you're going to have the tools to do the job, but, You know, what are those soft skills, right? Are you somebody who's going to come in and just want to do your job, or you want to help grow the organization, right? I think that's important as well.
Cool. And I know that you guys have, a good amount of people in different places. You know, you have a development team in California, so on and so forth. We spoke briefly about this, but, you know, the remote worker dynamics and managing remote workers. How have you found that? Has that been a particular challenge, or has that been something that you've been kind of used to?
Well, we're definitely used to it from a development standpoint. Again, you kind of got to go where the talent is, right? And again, I'm not saying there's not talent everywhere, right? But, you know, there's pools of talent in California. There's pools of talent in New York. There's Toronto, right? Toronto's a huge bed now for technical talent, right? So we have a huge office up there. Austin's another one, right? So, you know, I think, you know, just if you want to be a successful technology company, and again, all companies are technology companies, you gotta go where the talent is. Again, working with, you know, people in different time zones is always a challenge. But I think you gotta, you know, again, if you hire the right people, you gotta be engaging, right? You know, from a management perspective, you know, it's not like the team in California is not gonna talk to you. I have a daily stand up with all the teams, right? You know, so again, you want to have that constant conversation. Otherwise, I think projects or what people are working on, it falls apart, right? You want to make them feel engaged in what they're doing, right? So we, you know, outside of, you know, doing the daily stuff, right? You know, we're always trying to, you know, give company updates, right? You know, have those town halls, understand, you know, what they need to be successful, like I said before. You know, again, and different areas want different things, right? So it's always trying to juggle all that and, you know, again, try to be as fair as you can. But again, hitting everybody, making sure they have a voice, you know, making sure they understand, you know, what you're doing and what you're expecting them is very important, whether they're in Toronto, California, you know, Bangladesh, you know, Ukraine, right? I've worked with developers in areas like that as well. And it's the same thing. You got to be engaged with them, constant contact, you know, conversation. And collaboration is a huge thing, right? Tools like Slack, you know, again, instant messaging being around forever. I've come from the days that AOL instant messaging was the start. Now you got Facebook Messenger, Slack, everything like that. But again, it's been helpful for us to, you know, get over email and be in contact and have those types of conversations that we need to succeed.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're almost there on the, technology and the remote side of things. I mean, obviously, you know, you guys managed to find a way. I think it's pretty obvious that, especially when you're trying to create a rock star development team, you have to kind of look further afield in some instances, because as you said, the demand for the talent is just outweighs the supply quite significantly. So, remote works is inevitable in a lot of cases, especially if you want the best talent. So.
Yeah, it's also very cyclical too. You know, again, let's just separate it into front and back end, right? A few, maybe a year or two ago, front end was in huge demand, right? And back end, not so much. So again, you know, talent pool is there, right? But, you know, again, what we're seeing at least is, you know, there's more front end availability or more, you know, availability, but the back end is being swiped up, right? So again, you know, it's very cyclical in how that works. So from an organizational standpoint too, you have to plan for that. Right. And build out your teams accordingly. You know, just so you, for an example, you know, we've had a lot of our front end UI stuff out in San Fran, or California. And now, you know, we're trying to, you know, have some of that as well in Toronto, just to, from a demand perspective. Right. And break up the organization from a development standpoint to have those resources available in multiple areas. Right. So, you know, again, it's not something that we did a year or two ago, but we need to do that now just because of the talent pool and the way, you know, the market for talent in general is just, you know, expanding.
Yeah, and it's not such a scary proposition anymore with, you know, like you say, the Slack and the ways of communication. It's fine, I think now. I think it's not unrealistic to have, you know, a total remote team if necessary. I think there's still a place for people in office and that communication face-to-face. I think there's always going to be somewhat of a need for it. But, you know, from many parts of a project, it's probably not quite necessary anymore, but and kind of you guys are, or certainly you, Tom, are proof in the pudding, if you like. So
well, we're trying.
Yeah, definitely. Well, What is it for you within technology and the space and kind of your work at the moment that you're really excited about and moving forward? What's coming that you're particularly excited about as well?
Yeah, I think changing the way people work is again what we've done, at least current spot and part of the things. And I think again, working with some organizations now, working with spreadsheets and whatnot, being very on paper is still very prevalent out there, right? So, bringing people together from a work perspective, changing the way they work is there's a lot of things that are coming out from, and again, that's why messaging and Slack and collaboration has become so popular now, because it's changing the way people work. Whether it's, again, from collaboration standpoint or just being in that constant contact and allowing people share information. I think, again, that's kind of what I see as still being its value, because there's a lot of areas that are still ripe for disruption and a lot of different verticals from a business perspective that are still doing things the old way, right? And you find, again, we focus on retail. I've always found retail and financial services to always be, I guess, behind the eight ball from a technology adoption perspective. So there's still a lot of opportunity there, to bring some of that collaboration aspect into those places. And, again, you see retail is a struggling place. So how can we save them money, right? So, there's a lot of stuff happening there. And I think AI, right, just AI in general, is a very interesting technology that's people are investing a lot of dollars in. You see Facebook, you see Amazon, you see IBM Watson, somebody like IPsoft spending a lot of money on AI. Right. And there's a lot of, what does that mean? Right. There's a lot of ways that automation can help save organizations time, money, efficiency. So that's something, again, that I think in the next couple of years that, something that even CrossCap or some few organizations can start getting into that can help and solve some interesting problems. So that's where my head's at this point.
Awesome. Yeah. And just quickly, if you could kind of sum up, some key kind of characteristics or traits, if you like, that have kind of you feel have held you in good stead, and you feel are necessary to have a productive career in technology.
Again, I think that willingness to learn, you brought it up and focused on it a little bit. Again, you're going to learn a language, you're going to learn different types of programming language, Python, C++, Java, it doesn't matter. It's that willingness to learn and keep learning is what's going to keep you in demand, right? There's always going to be a new hot technology that's out there, right? But if you know how to code, if you know how to do these things, you're going to be able to pick that up. So I think that's very important. I think the other piece, like I said, is, don't just be someone who wants to do technology and that's it. Like technology, coding, IT, it doesn't matter. Learn the business side. Understand what you're doing and the effect that it has on your organization and, the clients that are using that. Because if you know that, you're just going to be that more valuable to organizations and the demand for you is going to be there.
It's a great finishing point. Tom, it was lovely having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time, mate.
Awesome. Nice talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com. And keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.